You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, along with Rob Rang. Happy Tuesday to all of our listeners. This show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks, announcing what had been obvious for the past several weeks to anyone who was at training camp this year, Coach Pete Carroll officially announced Ethan Posick as the Seahawks starting center for week one. He has been in the first team offense since day one of training camp, and BJ Finney was just never really able to turn this into a legitimate competition, really struggled. And I thought it was telling 1 week into camp that Finney was getting more reps as a backup guard than he was at the center position. At that point, I think they already had made their decision, but obviously Carroll did not want to tip his hand until this week. Finally, yesterday, was willing to admit that they have picked a center. Posick is going to be the guy on day one. And Rob, to me, the biggest thing that was an advantage for him is that he has been in Mike Solari's scheme for a couple years, and he is now playing his natural position, really, for the first time since he was drafted in 2017.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a huge part of it, of course, Corbin. I think that you know, the fact that he walked in having the just basically in his back pocket, the experience of being in Solari's system, as you said, the familiarity with Russell Wilson as his quarterback. Obviously, BJ Finney doesn't have any of those things. Ethan Posick, as we've talked about so many times, doesn't have that ideal frame for the center position. But, you know, that was one of the things that really jumped out to me when I saw him in person at the early training camp practices. Is he does look thicker in his lower half. That had always been one of my biggest concerns with him. And so I thought that physically he looked like he was ready to take this step. Mentally, he had the advantage already. And then it just looked like, you know, and this is the caveat, is of course this isn't real life football until they actually start playing, you know, this upcoming Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. But based on everything that we saw, it really does look like Ethan Posick has put it all together and looks in to be in very good position to be, not only Seattle's starter, but a leader along the offensive line.
We've talked about this several times throughout the offseason. Durability has been the biggest issue for Posick his first couple years in the league. He had a very promising rookie season with 11 starts at guard and then only started a handful of games in his second season. He lost his starting job when he injured his ankle. J.R. Sweezy didn't relinquish the spot. Once he got healthy, he was on the bench. And then last year was on the injured reserve twice. But Carroll mentioned this yesterday, that he had surgery to repair a sports hernia-related injury that's been bothering him for several years. And so he is the healthiest that he has been, really, since he came to Seattle his rookie season. And you can see that on the field. He just looks better on the field. You mentioned him being thicker in the lower half. It really does look like his body is where it needs to be. He's much healthier. He got through training camp with no issues. Again, when real football starts up, especially given circumstances, we don't know what the injury situation is going to look like. I would hedge bets there are going to be more injuries these first couple weeks because there have been no preseason games and you had such a different training camp. But that said, he has looked pretty darn good out there, really gave BJ Finney no chance to compete for this position. Again, it was very telling to me that 1 week into camp, you saw Finney getting a lot of work as a reserve at both guard spots, mainly because they were giving a lot of those first team reps at center to Ethan Posick. Eventually, he was getting all of them. So it was very clear early in camp that he was going to be the guy there. Justin Britt's been looked at. Maybe there's still a chance they could bring Britt back at some point, but they still have not agreed to terms with him. He visited with the Packers yesterday. And so Justin Britt is still trying to find a job. Looks like maybe the Seahawks are comfortable moving forward right now with Posick as the starter and BJ Finney as his backup. Now, while Pete Carroll was able to spill the beans about the center position, he's not willing to do that just yet at the right cornerback spot. And Rob, I think a lot of this has to do with gamesmanship. When you look at the Falcons' two of their best players are the receivers in Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, and obviously Matt Ryan under center. This is a team with a high-powered offense, or at least the capability to have a high-powered offense. And I think right now, Pete Carroll, he doesn't want to tip his hat at all. He wants to keep his card close to his vest on who he's going to be playing there. I wouldn't be surprised if we really don't know who's going to be starting opposite Shaquille Griffin until they actually take the field on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that the Seahawks, as you're saying, are using a little bit of gamesmanship at this point, just because I think that physically it doesn't really matter that much whether it is Quentin Dunbar or Trey Flowers. Both of them have such similar size. You assume that they are going to be primarily lining up against Julio Jones, Atlanta's bigger of their two receivers. But at the same time, as you also mentioned, they have a superstar on the other side in Calvin Ridley as well. And so regardless of who Seattle matches up against those receivers, it's going to be incumbent on that defensive line to be able to get some pressure on Matt Ryan because those are two excellent receivers. Of course, the Falcons have one of the better quarterbacks in all the league as well in Matt Ryan. So I think that there has been a little bit of gamesmanship on Seattle's part in that way, especially because Atlanta is known for also operating a lot of three receiver sets. That they do have a lot of changes at the tight end and running back spots. So I think that is what Seattle's doing here. But at the same time, going back to the center position, I applaud Pete Carroll for specifically pointing out Ethan Posick. You know, as a former offensive lineman myself, Corbin, I know as well as a lot of people out there that the offensive linemen usually don't get a lot of credit unless they do something wrong. That's the only time they ever really get called out on television. And so for Posick to have really earned that starting role, basically successfully fended off Justin Britt, or at least his two workouts, and obviously B.J. Finney's still on the roster. I think that the Posick deserves that acknowledgement. I'm curious to see who the Seahawks wind up starting at that cornerback spot opposite Griffin in week one.
And I've got some breaking news here to add on top of this. We know that Quentin Dunbar last month, charges for armed robbery were dropped against him. But now Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News is revealing that there are some new texts that have been released that put Dunbar back in the middle of the armed robbery with DeAndre Baker. I am just now seeing this, so I can't even tell you what the texts are, but that is a development now to monitor, because the Seahawks have been saying that Dunbar was away from the team for a funeral, and that's probably what's going on, but it is worth noting he had another practice that he missed for an excused absence. And so have to wonder if some of this is stemming from this new information that is being released. So another wrinkle in this interesting saga for Quentin Dunbar. We're going to have to see what else trickles out here in coming hours and days, and maybe that puts his status in a tenuous position for week one. We don't know. Right now, I would say that he's going to be able to play for the Seahawks based on what we know, but this is some new information that has been brought to light, and that might make it a little easier for the Seahawks to say, all right, Trey Flowers is our starter in week one. We'll just have to see what happens. Again, I am just now seeing this. Haven't even had an opportunity to comb through the article, but it is going around viral on Twitter now. And so certainly it looks like there's a new development to keep an eye on here. When we come back in the second quarter, Throwback Tuesday, we're going to revisit Seattle's week 8 victory over the Atlanta Falcons last year, getting ready to head back to Atlanta to an empty Mercedes-Benz Stadium this time around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in" their "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host, Rob Rang. Later in the show, we're going to introduce the 2020 Atlanta Falcons, Seattle's upcoming season opening opponent. tough road game to open up the 2020 campaign. We're going to look at the new additions, some players that have left the Atlanta Falcons, and of course, some key draft picks that have been added to the fold. First, it's Throwback Tuesday. The Seahawks are pretty familiar with playing in Atlanta. They actually played there in week 8 last season. They picked up a 27-20 victory over the Falcons, but this was one of the weirder games that I have watched over the years. And you and I both know the Seahawks, they love playing weird games. That's kind of been an MO for Pete Carroll's squads. They like to win ugly a lot of the time. And so you see a lot of these crazy games. But this was one of the stranger ones that I've seen since Carroll's been coached starting in 2010. The Seahawks built a 24-0 halftime lead on the Falcons, who entered the game at 1-6. So you're just thinking this game's going to end with like a 40 to nothing or 40-3 or something. They've got their backup quarterback in Matt Schaub playing. There's no way the Falcons are going to claw back into this, and yet they did. So it really was one of those games that was a tale of two different halves.
It really was. I think that's a great way of kind of setting up the game, Corbin, because for fans who remember this game, it was a tale of two halves. As you mentioned, Seattle took a 24-0 lead into halftime and then kind of had to hang on at the end because Matt Schaub just was breaking records quite literally, with just the way that he was able to pass the Falcons back into this game. And, you know, we kind of talked about this game a lot because it was kind of the start of that, that rope-a-dope conversation. And the Seahawks had kind of played around a little bit with the Cincinnati Bengals in week one. They go, as you mentioned, this was a team that in the Atlanta Falcons that was 1-6 at this point in the season. It looked like it was just a certainty that Dan Quinn was going to be fired. The team is just, the Falcons had been ravaged with all kinds of injuries. And then there had been some talk that maybe Matt Ryan would be able to suit up in this game, but it wound up being Matt Schaub. He threw for 460 yards, but at the same time, he only threw for the one touchdown. The Seahawks held Devontae Freeman, Atlanta's leading rusher at that time. We're going to talk some more in the third quarter about some of the changes to this team. But at that time, Devontae Freeman was Atlanta's leading rusher, and he was led to, or he only had 13 carries for 39 yards. So clearly, Seattle was able to go into Atlanta, kind of seize control of the game and basically just be able to ride it out and make Atlanta be one-dimensional. And that usually is a recipe for a win as long as Pete Carroll's been guiding the Seahawks.
Let's talk about what went right in this game, because obviously something went right to get a 24-0 halftime deficit on the road in the NFL. I don't care who the opponent is, and the Falcons still had plenty of good players out there. Russell Wilson was dialed in early. He only had 182 passing yards in this entire game. Most of that happened in the first two quarters, and he was particularly sizzling throwing the ball to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Now, Metcalf only had 3 receptions for 13 yards, but 2 of those were touchdown receptions. So it was his first multi-touchdown game of his young NFL career. Meanwhile, Tyler Lockett, 6 receptions for 100 yards, and several of those were spectacular. I remember there was one drive that they had 2 throws from Wilson to Lockett where Kendall Sheffield, the young corner formerly of Ohio State, was all over Lockett, and Wilson just put the ball in a place that he could not defend it, and then Tyler Lockett made incredible one-handed grabs on both of them. So again, he showed he's not just a quick receiver. He's got incredible hand-eye coordination, the ability to reel in one-handed catches, and so that played a role in them building that big halftime lead. And they also ran the ball really well. Chris Carson and Rashad Penny combined for 145 yards on the ground and a touchdown, the vast majority of that damage coming in the first two quarters. So really, the offense was humming on all cylinders the first two quarters.
Yeah, it really was. And that was the thing, is that we just talked about that Seattle was, their offense was humming in the first half because they had the running game going as well as Russell Wilson's accurate passing. With Atlanta basically having one hand time behind their back without any type of semblance of a real running game. And then with a quarterback in Matt Schaub who doesn't have a big arm, isn't real mobile, then they basically had to just kind of throw the ball up and hope that their superstar wide receiver Julio Jones would make big plays. And you talked about DK Metcalf. That to me was one of the things that really jumped out to me in this game. Is, you know, in all of the build up to that game and the build up about DK Metcalf throughout training camp a year ago, I have consistently made that comparison that DK Metcalf is essentially the second coming of Julio Jones, just a guy who is just bigger, stronger, faster than anybody else that you're going to try and cover him. And so to see those two superstar wide receivers basically go, you know, whatever you can do, I can do better with Metcalf and his efficiency and touchdowns. Julio Jones had 10 catches for 152 yards against the Seahawks, obviously, in a losing effort. You know, it was really a remarkable game in that perspective, from a fantasy football perspective. But you're right, Corbin, as far as some of the things that went wrong, Seattle's inability to get consistent pressure on a quarterback, who lacks mobility, was one of the unfortunate negative things that we saw happen all year long.
Before we get to that, I just real quick, I hate to rub salt in the wound because Jadeveon Clowney just signed with the Titans a couple days ago, but Jadeveon Clowney had one of his best games for the Seahawks in Atlanta. 4 quarterback hits, a sack, and a forced fumble. Michael Kendricks also had a big first half interception that set up another scoring drive. So two players, really the two guys that had the best games in Atlanta, they are no longer on Seattle's roster. Obviously, the Seahawks have added some key pieces on defense to replace those players, but that allowed them to really put the foot on the throat in the first half to build that 24-0 advantage. And then, you know, going off what you just said, obviously, when you have a 24-0 lead, it's pretty easy to get complacent in halftime. And I think that is really what happened with the Seahawks. They had the foot on the pedal, and then they just took it off, and they just coasted in the second half, and they almost paid for it because you're allowing Matt Schaub to throw for over 450 yards. The Falcons got 30 first downs in this game, and this is what makes this remarkable, Rob. They only converted 3 out of 9 third down attempts in the entire game. So they were getting all of those first downs on early downs. And that's when you know that your offense is just coasting and the defense is putting up very little resistance. And a lot of that happened in the second half as Atlanta tried to make a comeback, and they got within one score in this game, but they just couldn't find a way to pull off and finish off this stunning comeback. But nonetheless, a really impressive half for them. Seattle, on the other hand, Pete Carroll talked about after the game, you could see that he was pretty disappointed given the fact that they were up that many points. And to come out in the second half, the offense to be that lackluster, just seemed to shut it down after halftime. No aggressiveness. The run game suddenly was non-existent. Russell Wilson didn't do much aside from having a drive that orchestrated a field goal. And they had long stretches where the pass rush again completely disappeared. A lot of that damage from Clowney happened in the first half. It seemed like that front line just could not get to Schaub at all. You add all those factors together, it was one of those games where you won, but afterward, a lot of the question marks were, why did this game end up being close when it never should have been?
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, the Seahawks had 5 drives in the second half of this game, Corbin, and 4 of them wound up being 3 and outs or less. The end of the game that Seattle only had 2 plays before they kneeled down. The only drive that of any substance in the second half resulted in a field goal that was critical because Atlanta did come roaring back, and they wound up only the Seahawks wound up winning this game by 7. But if you remember, I mean, it was pretty testy there in those last couple of moments. But for everything to go right as it did on offense in the first half, and everything basically went wrong in the second half, or that it was so so logical, Dan Quinn of course knows Pete Carroll as well as anybody, that what the Seattle is going to try and do, they're going to try and run the ball and bleed the clock and basically hold out for that rare victory on the road, and the Falcons took advantage of that, and as you mentioned, they were getting chunk plays on first and second downs to be able to rack up that number of first downs and still not have any kind of real success on third down is staggering, frankly. And as you mentioned, with the sack that Clowney had in this game, that was big. The only other sack that the Seahawks got was a Bobby Wagner blitz. I mean, that was the real sign that this was a pass rush that was going to be an Achilles heel for the Seahawks all season long.
And I think the thing that's worth noting from this game, I think the Atlanta Falcons had a really good chance to win, and they blew it because early in the fourth quarter, they drove inside the Seahawks 10-yard line, and then Matt Schaub found Devonta Freeman for a 7-yard reception, and then Marquise Blair punched the football out at the 1-yard line, the biggest play that he made his entire rookie season, and Bobby Wagner recovered it. They ended up scoring a field goal on that ensuing drive. They drove all the way from the 6-yard line down to Atlanta's 36, and they were able to get a 54-yard field goal from Jason Myers, which proved decisive. But imagine how differently this game may have looked if Matt Schaub and the Falcons punched it in from a yard out. That ball didn't get knocked out of Devonta Freeman's hands by Blair. You're suddenly looking at a game that maybe the Falcons pull off this stunning miracle comeback and the Seahawks leave Atlanta embarrassed.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, entering that game, that the Falcons have been one of the most disappointing teams in all of the NFL. But this game, the resiliency that the Falcons showed was one of the real turnarounds for their team. And the Falcons actually wound up playing fairly well the second half of the season. Of course, Dan Quinn is back as the head coach. That looked like there was no chance of that going to be the case when the Falcons were 1-7 at that point in the season. So, you know, it really was, you know, again, a fascinating game and one that it's kind of showed the way that, you know, that the Seahawks season unfortunately would end.
Yep, we saw too many times where the offense stalled for long periods of time, and then too many times where the defense couldn't get pressure on quarterbacks, and that allowed opposing teams to put up a lot of points in quick fashion. We saw that too many times last year. They're hoping that both those issues are curbed this season going into 2020. When we come back, speaking of 2020, it's time to start looking at this upcoming Week 1 matchup. We're going to look at some new players, some players that left Atlanta. We're just going to look at the big changes for the Falcons going into the 2020 season as Seattle gears up for the season opener. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for the Tuesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Last year, the Atlanta Falcons, we talked about this a little bit last quarter, Seattle faced them when they were 1-6. They were reeling, one of the worst records in the entire NFL. Despite having a lot of talent on both sides of the football, they were ravaged by injuries. The offense did not produce as expected. They lost several close games early in the season as well. The pass rush was near non-existent. They had some of the same problems that the Seahawks had during the course of the 2019 season. But after they nearly came back and beat the Seahawks, Matt Ryan returned the following week. The Falcons reeled off some really impressive wins in the second half. They beat the 49ers. They beat the Saints. They finished 6-2 down the stretch. They ended the year almost back to 500. They finished 7-9, second place in the NFC South, really started to turn things around. And I think when you look at some of the changes that they've made this offseason, Rob, even though the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now have Tom Brady, they brought in Rob Gronkowski, obviously everybody's going to be favoriting them, and the Saints have tons of talent. They've been one of the best teams in football for several years in a row. Drew Brees trying to make one last run at a Super Bowl. This is a very difficult division, the NFC South, but yet I think the Falcons very much, if they can stay healthy, that's been a big issue the last couple of years, I very much expect them to be in the mix for a playoff spot.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I thought that, again, that last year's slow start for the Falcons was one of the real stunners in all of the NFL. Was not at all surprised to see that team fight back a year ago, and have the impressive second half of their season. And as you mentioned, Corbin, not having Matt Ryan was a big part of that game against the Seahawks. Ryan did play for the Falcons when they struggled early out of the gates last year, and he was a big part of their catalyst as far as their rise last year in the second half of the season. Obviously, Matt Ryan is going to be healthy and ready to play in Week 1 in this game, and the Falcons have a lot of talent. Besides the guys that you already know, we talked about Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, but you know, there's of course some huge additions that the Seahawks fans, fortunately or unfortunately, are going to be very familiar with. And you know, one of them is of course the running back Todd Gurley. I think that another one that doesn't get enough attention would be another former Ram in Dante Fowler Jr., who's going to be playing a pass rusher role alongside Tack McKinley, a couple of first round caliber edge rushers that are going to give Seattle's offensive tackles everything that they want to deal, you know, that they can handle in this game. So those are a couple of the big time additions. And then Hayden Hurst at the tight end position, I think is somebody that the Seahawks, just knowing how much they've struggled with guarding tight ends in the past, that is going to be a huge challenge in this very first game of the season.
The Falcons did lose Austin Hooper in free agency. He signed a monster deal with the Cleveland Browns, but I do think Hayden Hurst, maybe not as good of a player as Austin Hooper, but certainly with Matt Ryan throwing to him, I expect that Hurst is going to be a big part of this offense. I still believe Todd Gurley has plenty left in the tank. I know there's questions about his knee. He's coming off one of his worst seasons last year. The Rams were in salary cap hell, and they needed to do something to open up some cap space. So they were willing to eat some money to release Gurley. That contract they gave him a few years ago ended up being a disaster. But I still think that you put him in this offense, he's back in his home state of Georgia. I think this is the perfect offense for him to still be a very productive back. I don't expect that he's ever going to be an MVP caliber player again. I don't know that he's ever going to be that true workhorse at this point in his career because of his knee issues, but I think you still saw glimpses. He played really well against the Seahawks when the Rams beat them in Los Angeles in week 14 last year, scored a touchdown in that game and a couple of really big plays. I think he can still be dynamic, especially in the receiving game, and I expect that offensive coordinator Dirk Cotter is going to get the football into his hands quite a bit in that capacity. They're going to use him a lot in the throwing game. And so he's going to be involved quite a bit in this offense. They're going to find ways to get the football to him. And I think Dante Fowler Jr. is the best addition they made during free agency. We talked about the Seahawks potentially making a run at him. I think in Dan Quinn's defense, this is going to be a really good fit for him. He's going to get a lot of opportunities to pin his ears back, get after the quarterback. He's coming off of his best season as an NFL player with 11.5 sacks, and he has had a lot of success in the past against the Seahawks. He had 1.5 sacks in that Week 14 win last year against Seattle, so he knows how to hunt down Russell Wilson. He's done it plenty of times, and I anticipate he's going to be a problem for the Seahawks in this opener. So those are three big additions. You look at the departures. Austin Hooper, obviously, they just weren't going to pay him the money that the Browns did. They let him go. They replaced him with Hurst. Vic Beasley was released. He's now with the Titans. I still don't think he actually participated in any of their training camp stuff, though. So he has been a disappointment since he had one monster season in Atlanta, and they just decided to cut ties with him. And then cornerback Desmond Trufant, who's now with the Lions, he was released as part of a salary cap move as well. So a couple veterans that have been on that defense, they've moved on from. But one of the guys they brought in to help replace Trufant was former Clemson corner A.J. Terrell, who they picked in the first round.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I think that's where the Atlanta Falcons are vulnerable, because we talked about the pass rushers that they have, but they have a lot of youth in the secondary. And, you know, before we talk about A.J. Terrell from Clemson, the first round pick and all of that, there is one more addition to this roster that is significant, and that being that safety, Keanu Neal. Now, Neal, of course, has been with the Falcons for several years now, but he has struggled with durability. He was not on the field like Matt Ryan for the Falcons when they played against the Seahawks a year ago. And as we just talked about, that was a very close game. You basically are taking away two of the arguably the Falcons' best player on offense and the quarterback, and their best player on defense and Keanu Neal. And it's easy to see how that game could absolutely be flipped, if the Falcons had those two players. So Neal is a big part of that secondary. A.J. Terrell is a guy that is young and he can fly. He's got all the tools that you're looking for. He's physical. He's got long arms. He catches the ball well. At the same time, he also is a young player, and young players sometimes struggle with confidence. I mean, anybody who watched the national championship game and saw LSU pick apart A.J. Terrell, frankly, that was one of his more disappointing performances. That's something the Seahawks are going to have to try and take advantage of, is because Terrell, again, is going to be making his NFL debut. On the flip side, the other starting corner is going to be Isaiah Oliver, another former early round draft pick out of Colorado. But still, he's not expected to be able to handle Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf one-on-one. So I think that it's going to be incumbent on the Seahawks to challenge those young corners early on, along with obviously running the ball, because that is the one area which the Atlanta, I think, is very, very talented, but also so raw that you should be able to get some big plays on them.
I think there's a lot of upside with that corner group, but certainly the Seahawks should be favored in that matchup. We're going to break that down more in a later episode this week, but Terrell's certainly going to have a very difficult first test here, being lined up against Lockett or Metcalf. There's a couple other draft picks that were intriguing by the Falcons. Marlon Davidson, who they picked out of Auburn, a big-bodied, 295, 300-pound guy that can play defensive end. They're listing him as a second stringer at defensive tackle right now, but he's got the size that he can play on the inside, and he was a player that I thought the Seahawks would have a lot of interest in, so it did not surprise me at all. Dan Quinn running a very similar defensive scheme would be very interested in bringing in a versatile player like Davidson that you can move around the defensive line. Is a surprisingly good pass rusher when he wants to be, can stuff the run. He was a player that I really liked when I watched film of him at Auburn. And so, again, somebody I thought the Seahawks had their eyes on. Not surprised the Falcons brought him in. I expect he's going to get plenty of snaps. It's going to be his NFL debut too, but certainly a guy that can be a bit of a game wrecker in the interior.
He can, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention their best player along the defensive line, Grady Jarrett. And Grady Jarrett is not Aaron Donald, but he is he's very close to that. And we know how much that Seattle has struggled with those, you know, kind of shorter, squatter, quicker defensive tackles in the past. Jarrett can do that. We just talked about what a difficult debut it may be for Atlanta's rookie corner AJ Terrell. It could be a very difficult debut for Ethan Posick in Seattle's the middle of Seattle's offensive line, just because of the talent that Grady Jarrett, Marlon Davidson possess, and as well as the fact that the Atlanta Falcons have often used a lot of twists and stunts to take advantage of those speedy pass rushers. You mentioned Vic Beasley and the big time season that he had a couple of years ago. Tack McKinley is the one from UCLA that they're expecting him to be the next star pass rusher for this team. As good as Dante Fowler is, Tack McKinley is going to be one to watch on those twists and stunts as well.
We're going to continue to dive into the Falcons roster, and we're going to be looking in tomorrow's episode at a bunch of key matchups, both on offense and defense for these two teams as they gear up for their season opener. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Wednesday episode, as I just mentioned, we're going to dive into some of the key matchups to watch in Seahawks versus Falcons in the season opener. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.